Welcome to The Foundry, where leaders are forged daily. Each week, we investigate themes of leadership, entrepreneurship, and mindset with some of the greatest minds in real estate. And now, the data scientist of real estate, George Roberts.
All right, welcome back, investors. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Lindsay Duguay, founder of Clover Key Capital. She's a woman who wears many hats, ER doc, Northeast Regional EM director, author. She's a mentor. We're going to talk about that upcoming mentorship program. It's going to be launched right around the time that this podcast drops. But I want to let you tell your own story, Lindsay. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Very excited about this. I already did a lot this morning. So this is right before lunch here. We get to get into this. So yeah, as you
right, you were telling me, so you had like what, investor calls, you have some relating to your leadership position at work calls, and
yep. And my
and you got a podcast
just got up
too.
From his nap and he just went with the nanny that way. So if you hear him, he's in the background. So.
Okay. Yes. And I know there are many other things I could mention, like mother of three, et cetera, but definitely we're going to, like I said, we're going to definitely have a getting to know you section because I think that you're one of the more interesting people that I've met. But first of all, like I said, I want to hear you tell your own story. So when you're at a cocktail party and somebody asks, so what do you do? How do you answer?
Yeah, I should refine my elevator pitch a little bit here, I guess. But yeah, as you mentioned, I'm married. I'm a mother to three kids, 7, 5, and 2. My husband and I started Clover Key Capital, a real estate investment firm, almost five years ago, March of 2019. So we're just coming up to the 5-year anniversary here. So we started single family houses that we found off market ourselves. We did Burr method up from single families to duplex, quad, 10-plex. Then we started getting into a mastermind group and started doing JV deals, syndications. And as of last month, we're now at just over 550 units across the Eastern United States that were active GPs on closing on an 8 unit this week also, which is exciting. So we're very, very entrenched in the real estate business. We joke that I'm more the front end. I like to talk. I host meetups locally now. I really like to teach others about the power of real estate investing. I work with obviously a lot of physicians and we're not taught about real estate investing. You know, we're really more into the stocks traditionally. So it's been very, very fun to bring others from my hospital group on board and teach them about real estate investing. My husband is more the hands-on. Once we buy the stuff, he does the asset management, the tenant management. So we're a very good team together. Yeah. We have a lot of other business partners. So we all have different roles, but work together very well.
And so you're the front end in more than one way, because I think you're also involved in the acquisitions, right? That's
yes,
the other major hat that you're wearing at Clover.
Exactly. And from our smaller personal deals that my husband and I do, I've done everything from direct mail campaigns where I'm literally writing handwritten letters, sending them out to mom and pop type sellers. And then I love that chase and the negotiation phase and getting these really good deals off market for great prices. Always looking for a win-win situation too, right? We always want to make sure that the sellers are getting what they need and what are their pain points. So we do that with our own deals. And then as far as the bigger syndication size side, I do a lot of capital raising now too, which is really fun. Again, teaching others about the power of real estate investing.
Yeah, really exciting. So I don't always like to hear people go right back to the very get-go. But I know that you do have like a very wide range of assets, right? I mean, you just said an 8 unit. I know a lot of people, they get to, you know, hundreds of units and the 8 unit doesn't interest them so much anymore. So maybe you can tell us about your investing thesis. So I think I have an idea why that might be the case. You're going after these, direct to market or direct to seller. And I'm sure that you're able to find some deals with just a ton of meat on the bone, even at 8 units.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Even so, some people, like you mentioned, you know, we have the 212 unit, we have 110 unit. We are under contract for a very large industrial deal. So we have these bigger assets throughout the United States and we're local in Pennsylvania, but sometimes you just can't beat the cash flow and that value add on these smaller units. Like for instance, the 8 unit that we're closing on right now, it's a mom and pop seller, owns it in his own name. He's owned it for 20 plus years. The one tenant has been in the building since before he bought it. The guy was there, I think almost 35 years or something crazy. He's taken care of the building, but he really hasn't done a lot of upgrades to it. So there's so much meat on the bones, as you said, to now do the turns and get them up to 2024 type, you know, visual, and, you know, help with some of that deferred CapEx. And then we can bump them to market rents. And we already have a very, very strategic game plan how we're going to refinance it. And after the holding period of about 12 months or the seasoning period. And we've done that through many deals in the past. A 4-unit, a 10 unit to date has been our very best deal, where we got 275% cash back of our initial investment. So, you know, this 8-unit, 10 unit, some people probably do say, oh yeah, that's too small. Let's just go for the big, you know, $30 million real estate deal. But you might be getting 5-6% cash on cash. Meanwhile, these things, you know, even after the refi, we're still cash flowing thousands of dollars a month over all the units. So you can't beat that on some of these syndication deals. So it's all what's your risk tolerance? What are you looking for right now? Is it the cash flow? Is it the appreciation? Is it a combination? And we like to diversify into these different types of deals.
Yeah, I love it. And I feel like there's a lot of intelligence in that, just to go where the field is a little less populated. So mm-hmm. I love it. Have a similar investment thesis myself. I mean, you got to know what you're going for, but at the same time, I mean, you see these 8 units, 10 units, and, you know, not every deal has to be 212 units.
Yeah, exactly.
Great stuff. All right. So then, like most people, I think you probably had kind of a scarier start with real estate. I know you did some single family homes, et cetera. I know I've done a little research on you. You like to buy the worst house on the street.
Well,
on a nice street.
Yeah. Now we're good. Yeah. The initial ones were in D-class neighborhoods, very, very poor quality homes that we had picked up. The tenant base was not good. You know, D-class neighborhoods, for those that don't know, it's the worst neighborhoods. There's drugs on the street. The one single family, the house to the left and the right, were completely abandoned. So this is the type of situation and setting, just to kind of paint the picture, that we got for our first off-market single family homes. Now, I guess we're too stupid to quit, and we ended up working through it, and we got those rehabbed and did the full BRRRR method, and we owned them for 4 years, and they cash flowed very well. But we learned a lot through that process. However, we're not targeting D-class single family homes anymore. That is one thing we have grown up from.
Yeah, I love it. And really beautiful too. I mean, I know that those neighborhoods are really difficult to work in, but if you're looking to grow up fast, certainly you can make some money if you're willing to get your hands dirty.
We definitely got our hands dirty. I remember we were rehabbing. If you haven't watched any of my other podcasts, we had paid a contractor upfront in cash and we didn't have a contract. So that guy stole our money. So my husband and I had to do some of the rehabs ourselves. And I remember I left work after a hospital shift and I was tearing up the carpet on the stairs myself. And a nail literally went through my knee. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, this is not passive. This is not like I'm hurting myself in the process. My husband, he literally had to change a sewer pipe by hand. It was a row home, and the next row of houses, you couldn't get any equipment in there. So by hand, my poor husband literally dug like a 6-foot by 8-foot by 4-foot trench and learned how to change a sewer pipe. So to say getting your hands dirty, I mean, it was quite literally getting our hands dirty. But now, as we've grown throughout, you know, the past 5 years, we have systems in place that we're not doing that much active management anymore. There's no more changing sewer pipes ourselves.
Yeah, it makes sense. For a lot of people, they don't have any capital coming in, and
that was us.
You know, really kind of have to do that. But yeah, I mean, of course, I mean, maybe you kind of did have that situation, because I mean, I can't remember how many years you are past the medical degree, but I mean, you described being like what, almost $250,000. In debt
in
coming out of that.
Debt, yeah. $230,000 when I became an attending just about 7 years ago now. So yeah, at the beginning we had these terrible properties that it was quite literal sweat equity that we were putting into these. And I was still paying down $230,000 in medical school debt from becoming a physician. So we were really in the red there at the beginning.
Yeah, well, I love the grit too. I mean, we're definitely going to talk about that some more later. That's a lot.
Yeah, like I said, great or stupidity or a combination of both, but we've powered through it.
Love the modesty too. All right. So yeah, you are a woman who wears many hats. And whenever I meet somebody like that, I have to ask, like, what are your top time management tips?
Time management, block scheduling. I mean, literally, I'm the opposite of my husband. He's very everything on the phone and electronic. I have my like handwritten calendar with me. I this is like my management Bible, I guess you can say. I have everything written down. So when I'm starting a week, I'm already looking, okay, what couple hours am I going to work on investor calls, set those up on Zoom or Calendly links. What days do I have hospital meetings and I'm not going to be able to do any type of real estate? What days am I volunteering at my kids' school? Because I still do have to be active with them. So my time management is very, very important, and it's really block scheduling. And not every week or day is the same. I'm an emergency medicine physician, so I work anything from nights to weekends to evenings to day shift, and every week is different. And our other secret, we have an au pair that lives with us too, which is wonderful. She's fantastic with the kids. And a lot of people think, oh, that must be really fancy. But when you calculate out the amount of hours she works for us for the price, honest to God, it's financially frugal, honestly. And she's a great help. She is my who, not how with that.
Oh, I love it. And, you know, definitely we have to talk about authorship. I am a little bit of an author myself. I've written my dissertation and scientific papers.
There you go.
But it's been a long time coming to actually get something out. But I'm writing a book about passionate living through passive investing.
That's wonderful.
And this is one of my big suggestions to people. Okay, look, you're probably a business owner if you're a passive investor, right? So get some help in the business, mm-hmm. or get some help in your passive investing, hire an assistant. And this is the part that I think a lot of people forget. You probably need something else, like housekeeping, au pair. I think it's perfect. So do your kids get to learn another language from this?
Yeah. So my husband's from France. He moved here almost 14 years ago. So it's English, French, and she's from Brazil. So she speaks Portuguese too. And it's so funny. Our youngest, the two-year-old, he'll be saying like, merci, s'il te plaît. And then he'll say mais, which means more in Portuguese. And then he'll speak English. So you'll get this like trifecta of languages in the same sentence. It's really
good. That is beautiful. And, you know, people get concerned about that, but you know, the confusion ends. They figure it out really fast. They disentangle the three. Okay. But your husband, he never taught you to speak fluently though, did he?
He didn't. I tell him he's a bad teacher with that, but then he says I'm a bad student because I can learn on my own and I'm not fluent in French.
Okay. So I better get you in trouble with this podcast, but I have the same issue in my house. I'm learning Spanish now and I don't want to speak Italian anymore because I said, look, you had your chance. You wouldn't teach my children and you didn't teach me. You know, I picked up what I could on my own and I understand the dinner table chat pretty well.
That's
and
good.
I can take part in that, but I'm not in any way fluent.
You can hear the gossip. That's good. I always said, I don't want my kids to learn so much French more than me. So I don't know what they're saying about me behind my back.
All right. I love it. Well, beautiful. And I think that's huge because, you know, people, you know, I think a lot of wealth is built by people who have a very frugal mindset, and that's important. But I think you get to a certain point, you just got to realize the time is more important and getting that au pair for your kids. Huge, really
it,
huge.
It is
I'm glad
huge.
You did that.
I love my quality time over the quantity time. Like to me, I don't get anything about sitting in the pickup or drop off line at school. She handles that while I can, you know, do podcasts and this kind of stuff. It's really balancing time and getting the most bang for your buck. So she is a true, true, valuable and integral member of our family.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah. I have a lot of help at home. Not quite an au pair though. Not live-in.
Yeah. She's definitely a who, not how. And I love that book by Dan Sullivan, Who, Not How.
Yes.
Actually this morning, one of the calls, we did an onboarding with a new VA that I'm using just for my social media and the marketing and stuff. He seems fantastic. So you'll probably see a lot more posted for on my social media accounts now, since he's taking over that again, because I have so much raw content from other podcasts and meetups and speaking and events. And then I don't have time to actually go through and do all these CapCut videos and stuff to get it out there. So that's kind of thinking bigger in the long term for my business. And it's an expense up front, but hopefully, you know, you see the fruits of the labor of it in the long run. I think that's so
exactly. Important. Hopefully saving a lot of brain damage.
As any area of business, you take what you don't like doing and hand it off to somebody who can do it better for you.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Okay, so now we have to get to your authorship. That was all just me being selfish, wanting to learn about these things, because that's really the you know, the joy of my life now is finally figuring out, after, you know, having been a scientist and working really hard and not getting a lot of money for it, then being a data scientist, having money, but still working too hard. Now having money and being able to just say, you know, forget about it. I'm going to just spend 2 hours learning about Lindsay Duguay, and I'm gonna have a great interview today. I can just do that.
And
I can
do that. That's the passionate life thing. Yeah, you get to do
exactly.
What you
I can
want
go out to a tango lesson in the middle of the day, and it's not a big thing. And my wife will just spring things on me, like, "Oh, we're doing this." Like, really? Well, you know, it's good that you know that I can just clear off my schedule, because otherwise, I don't know how an ordinary guy would do this. But okay, so we have to talk about your book. So you say a book, but you really just released two books.
Two books in 8 weeks. My partner and I got it done. Yeah.
So tell us the story behind the book.
Yeah. So the story behind this was about end of October, early November, I guess I should say. I'm big into mindset. Our whole, coaching mentorship, it's gonna be called Mind Shift to Millions. I think so much in life is where you focus your energy, that's where, the production ends up coming out. So I'm big into meditation, and every single night before I go to bed, I'll put on like a YouTube manifestation, something or other. And through one of these sessions, I had this thought, okay, we're going to write a book. And then I thought, okay, no, we're going to do two books. And I wanted it to showcase other people and their success in real estate investing too. So I reached out to my business partner, Lauren Zavinsky, who is another absolute crazy person like I am, who just gets stuff done. And we thought, okay, we're going to do two books. One's going to be Real Estate Investing Unlocked, real stories from women on their path to passive income and financial freedom, and then a male version. And I actually do have both of them here. So it's two books, one female, one male version. The female version has 16 stories from real women who have become very successful, and then 16 stories from men. I love the books too, because some of them are newer stories from investors who have the smallest investor, I should say, in the book has a 5 unit. So they're kind of at the beginning of their journey. They talk about their why, how they got started. And then in the women book, we have all the way up to Dottie Herman, who is literally, if you Google in richest women in real estate, she's the richest self-made woman in real estate. So we have this huge just gradient of successful people in this book. And each chapter is dedicated to one of the women or one of the men. And they really just go through and they tell their entire story about how they got started, why they got started, why passive income is important to them. And most of them say, yeah, it's that freedom of time. You can do what you want on your own terms now. And that's the whole reason I got into it too. I mean, I have my family. I want to create that generational wealth, but I want to do medicine on my own terms. It took me 11 years to get my medical degree. But at the beginning, before we had this passive income, if I don't go into work a shift, I don't get paid. If I'm not seeing those patients, I don't get paid. That's not passive income. That is total active W-2 salary. And I wanted to be able to pick and choose when I could do my shifts. And, through a lot of dedication and hard work, and thankfully we are at that time now where we do have that freedom. So that's really what we wanted to showcase in these books. And we got them out. They were published in mid-January, and we've had great feedback from them. I'm very thankful to everybody who contributed their stories in the books.
Yes. And of course, that's how I learned about you in the first place. So I got to say, go out there. If you're thinking about writing a book, definitely do it, because it puts you into, I think, a completely different level in terms of connections.
Mm-hmm. It does. And it was a lot of work. We actually went the self-publishing route. So they're on Barnes & Noble, they're on Amazon. So I actually bought a course on how to publish a book. So I paid $2,000 for it. It went through 10, 12 modules or something. So it took a lot of time to get them out, but it was very streamlined. So again, going back to the who, not how, I could try to learn and Google how to self-publish all day, but it would take who knows if it would have been months and I still wouldn't have them out, versus you just pay to get the guidance and the mentorship to do it right from people who have already done it. So
yeah, 2K sounds a little bit on the more economical side. I've certainly heard much higher prices quoted.
Well, yes. And I have talked to other people who said that, yeah, we can help you. We can write it for you. I don't want that. Like, I wanted to put my own also sweat equity into it. But there was a lot higher prices that were quoted to me too, which is why I just went okay, I'm going to buy a course. I'm going to learn how to do it myself through their modules. And it got done.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Yeah. So, how about this? Any lessons learned along the way of self-publishing? What would you share with aspiring authors?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go the self-publishing route, definitely do something like that. You know, get the course. Don't reinvent the wheel. These people have put out like thousands and thousands of books before. They have the processes down. So whether you want to self-publish or you want to learn how to play the flute or get invest or start investing in real estate, find a mentor. I think that is very, very key. Find some type of course, community to join for with other people that have been successful in whatever realm you're trying to do in general. So that was very, very helpful in the self-publishing, and to have a timeline too, and just stick to the deadline. Like, okay, we wanted to have X, Y, and Z chapter done by the end of this week, and really sticking to the deadlines helped myself and Lauren to get it done. And again, same thing with anything. If you want to go run a marathon, get a trainer and stick to the schedule and make sure you're following that grid and that game plan for it. So I think that's important for anything in life.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so I know we're going to delve into mindset a little bit more later on. I'm also just literally stoked about mindset and what it can do. I mean, really, it's everything, because it's not just what you're able to accomplish and how efficiently you're able to do it, but how much you get to enjoy it in the end, right? Got the right mindset, no amount of riches is going to help you. So you said a couple of times some phrases that I just love, like crazy enough or dumb enough. And I feel like this is a commonality. When I talk to entrepreneurs, it's all the same. They get an idea in their head and it just gets under their skin. It doesn't matter. You just follow through. And we say, I mean, I think we tend to be like modest. We say like, oh, we're just crazy enough to do it or dumb enough. But seriously, there's a lot to that. All right, anything to add?
No, I think it is, yeah, crazy dumb. I don't know. Just having that grit and the mindset to try to start and do things. There's so many people. Just since I published these books, I've had so many people say, "Oh, I've always wanted to write a book. I have this idea," or I started and I never finished. Like they lose that steam, they lose that power, or it comes back to your why too. Like, why do you want to do something? Why do you want to get this book out? Why do you want to start real estate investing? You really have to self-reflect and analyze yourself about what you want to get done and the why. But I think even somebody wants a six pack of abs, they start to do sit-ups for a week and then they give up. They end
Right.
too soon. You need to keep that determination going and just their consistency, the compounding effect. That's another great book I love, right? Small, consistent steps and action over time will lead to big results for yourself. And I think people lose that. They want to go all out at the beginning and they burn themselves out instead of doing smaller bite-sized steps, even if it doesn't feel like you're accomplishing much that week. If you look back at the last 52 weeks and you notice, okay, I called a broker this week. I set up my LLC this week. If you do smaller bite-sized steps, you can accomplish great things over time.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Well, I want to say, Lindsay, this has been awesome. I think we're going to wrap up the first segment here. I mean, we had a great time talking about your book, about your background in real estate and how you really got here. I mean, we'd even talk about how you're the first to go to college in your family. I mean, a lot of amazing stories, but I'll tell you what, we're going to pick right up, and second episode is going to drop on Thursday. So if you're listening to this, hopefully, you're all subscribers and you're getting this on the Monday it drops. We're going to come back on Thursday, drop another great episode, and we're going to talk about your new coaching program, which is about to drop. It's called Mind Shift to Millions. And I just love all that you're doing with mindset. Really a great shining light out there. And we're also going to talk a little bit more about real estate and what's going on in the market, because yeah, 2024, it's still kind of rough out there. But before we go, I want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to reach out to you. So we got mindshifttomillions.com and Clover Key Capital. What's the best way that people can reach out to you?
You could go to cloverkeycapital.com, sign up for the investor list. I send out monthly, sometimes weekly newsletters, depending on what's going on in the market or what I want to get out. On Facebook, I'm the only Lindsay Duguay, so you can direct message me there. Those are great ways to connect with me, or direct message me on Instagram at Doc Duguay, Duguet.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for taking your time to share your knowledge and experience with our audience.
Of course.